This podcast is produced in partnership with Freed2, a communications and digital agency for the charity world. We enable impact for good through thoughtful communication and efficient use of digital. Find out more at freed2.com.
Well, welcome to the latest episode of the Leadership Podcast. Myself, Sim Dendy, and my co-host, Ed Perry. Hi, Ed.
Hi, Sim. Lovely to be back. Really looking forward to another great conversation around leadership.
Well, our guest today is a phenomenal leader. It's John Kirkby, who founded Christians Against Poverty in 1996 with his wife, Lizzie. He had what he describes as a miraculous and amazing 25 years of seeing Jesus use them and their wonderful team in multiple nations, leading, and get this, 20,000 people a year out of debt and release them from poverty. What an incredible statistic. John was also recognized for his work in helping those in poverty, receiving a CBE for his work, and three-time winner of the Sunday Times Best Leader. And he also received an honorary doctorate from Bradford University. This is all true. In 2020, John stepped away from leading CAP and took time out to research how Christians talk about Jesus and whether there was a way to help people become more effective at sharing their story. The Isaiah 61 movement, or i61m.org, was born, and a new organization that helps Christians and churches share the good news of Jesus has been there to help us on the app or on the website. His official title might be Dr. John Kirkby, CBE, but he prefers to be known as Johnny Boy. So welcome. Yeah. Welcome to the podcast, the Leadership Podcast, Johnny Boy.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah. That all sounds odd. But yes, great. God has been very gracious and kind. Let's put it that way.
And is any of it untrue, John?
No, all true. But as always, behind the scenes at Disneyland, there is another journey and there is another story that kind of underpins all that stuff. And it's that amazing transformational power of Jesus Christ in my life. He gets all the glory, honor, and the praise. Without him, dear me.
Well, that leads nicely, John, because I want to hear the story behind the Disneyland, as you put it, behind the facade, behind all the awards, behind all the impressive achievements. You know, that's the story we want to hear on the Leadership Podcast of what really makes John Kirkby tick. And I just want to kind of set you up by telling us, you know, this every good story starts with a beginning. Yeah. And I know some of your story. And tell us, for those listeners who've never heard of you or heard of your work, can you tell us about, you know, when, you know, right, that moment, you're at your lowest ebb, and I believe, I think this is on, you know, public record, you were arrested. Yeah. You were arrested and you were actually, I've seen the photo of you being lined up. Tell us about what happened there.
Well, I'm there. I mean, obviously all our lives are a rich tapestry. Mine is perhaps more vivid than many, but certainly not that unusual. So born into a lovely home, amazing parents. Father became ill when I was 10. He got really, really poorly. I suffered from dyslexia, was deemed to have special needs at school. And my wife still maintains those special needs are still needed, although they're different. You know, remedial class, all that kind of stuff. Lost the plot, drugs, alcohol. I became quite a violent, angry young man, left school. 15, 16, I got a job as an unlicensed debt collector in Bradford. I often laugh, that's where my love of running came from. And then my dad died at 18. My mum was sectioned. Authorities shut the file. So I remember sitting down with the suits going, what's your date of birth? And I remember telling them, and literally they just closed the file and just went, you're 18. Walked off and left me. But I knew I needed to change. I had to work to eat and survive. So that's what I did. And I threw myself into what at the time was the consumer finance industry. I did reasonably well. I got married young, had two kids, ended up being a very creative and entrepreneurial at heart. So I was designing sort of consumer finance products, right in the industry. Did okay, made quite a bit of money. But behind the veneer of success was a really, really pretty broken guy, to be honest. I wasn't the best husband to my first wife. I wasn't, at the time, the best dad to my two little girls. I was entrepreneurial without wisdom or God, and that's quite a risky equation. Surprise, surprise, I lost everything. Ended up living in one in a friend's house with two girls, sleeping on camp beds. We had no money, put stuff back on supermarket shelves. Christmas Day, just baking sandwiches, abandoned by everybody. And in the midst of all that, the sort of combination of my past and, you know, this mess inside, I ended up getting arrested for repossessions that went wrong. The worst one was when I was in a house that went wrong, and I had to vigorously kind of defend myself to get myself body and soul out of that house. And for that, I was arrested for aggravated theft. It wasn't, and I was quite rightly found not guilty, that I used reasonable force. But that gives you a bit of an insight. That was my life. I did that stuff. Then, 1992, one guy reached out to me at probably one of my lowest situations. And my marriage had ended, bad. And he basically just was, he was compassionate and caring. You know, when you've got nothing and no money and you've made mistakes, the world just rejects you. Nobody wants to know. Nobody wanted to know me. Seriously, who wants to help him? He's in debt. He's not a right good dad. Although I was actually becoming a better dad, praise God, with my little girls. He was a Christian. I thought it was weird, but he was just lovely and cared for me and my girls and bothered about me. He invited me to church. I went July 1992. So we're well over 30 years now. Walked into a small church. Heard about this guy called Jesus, had shared, you know, Paul's life and his story. I knew what Christ meant to him. And that huge chasm inside my soul, spirit, and mind was filled with the Holy Spirit. And I realized that there was a better way. And then I was the worst baby Christian in the history of baby Christians, I reckon, for the next few years. Man, you know, when people get find Christ on Monday and by Wednesday in a midweek group, the singing in the worship band on Sunday, tithing by Wednesday, you know, and everything rising to the sunset. Oh my gosh, my testimony was, oh my gosh, the pain I must have put that poor church through. Because obviously I was messed up. But the church never abandoned me. Paul stuck with me. His spirit grew. I learned, I changed. And 4 years later, marrying Lizzie, we sat in a home office and decided to give up the finance career to go and help poor and needy people in my home city of Bradford and start Christians Against Poverty.
You make it sound, John, like, you know, just such a whistle-stop tour. Obviously, you give us an overview, but I can just imagine that season, the incredible confusion, the, you know, uncertainty, the where is my life going? I've blown it all, you know, broken marriage, in debt, you know, small children, feeling like you're not being a good parent. I mean, that's a huge amount to, I mean, respect to anyone just getting back on their feet to go on to do what you did, which we'll explore in a moment. But tell us a bit more about your friend Paul, because I know you're still in touch with your friend Paul.
Oh, yeah.
I love the story that he wasn't just, you know, a do-gooder Christian, but he absolutely stuck by you.
Oh, yeah.
He didn't just give you a track through the door.
Yeah. Oh, no.
Tell us about Paul's journey with you.
Whew, just get a bit of a moment then. I think one of the most defining moments, really, and he was many defining moments, but it was his care and compassion and his understanding of me and gentle spirit. So I remember he invited me to a barbecue, and when you're poor, you don't go anywhere. First of all, you feel rubbish. Everyone else is doing really well and you're not. It's not great. And I just said, oh, I'm busy. And he knew I'm busy. What was I doing, you know? He said, just come, John. I know it's all okay. Don't worry. You don't have to bring anything. And then what he did, him and his wife, as I went, he said, just come into the kitchen. I went into the kitchen and given a little bag together with some burgers and some stuff in, and he gave it to me. And he said, you take that to the barbecue, you know? And it was kind of understanding the deep emptiness and understood emotionally how to be a great friend. So, I just felt better. And he never hid his faith neither. He wasn't embarrassed about what Christ had done in his life. And he also was full of hope for me. And there was very little hope around. Not at all, really. But he had hope. And he believed in transformed lives, and he was going to live his life out like that. And as I say, still, you know, I always call him, he's my pastor, basically, whether I'm in his church or not. He is just a super guy and still continues. He's involved in Isaiah 61. He just sent a verse through, another one of his prophetic verses that just takes your breath away by God's ability to speak through one man to speak into your life and your ministry. So he's that kind of guy. But if you met him, you just think, what a super, super guy. Loves God, loves people, and he's not ashamed of sharing the gospel. And he discipled me and still does. Going out with him a week on Wednesday for some more.
Amazing. I love that long-term commitment. That's great.
Yeah.
I've got goosebumps hearing that story and just the way that God's worked through him in your life. Yeah. So, John, tell us about that moment where you sat down and you were in your home office with your wife and, Christians and Kids Property became the idea. Tell us about that, kind of how it started and how it developed.
So, by the way, as soon as I found faith, although I took a while to recover and come through, and I'm still on the journey 30 years later, please don't, not dental required here. I'm just Johnny Boy from Bradford. Fall short like we all do all the time, just loving the journey still. But I ran a secure lending division for a large insurance company. And I walked in one day and something just in me just broke. And I do not want to do this for the rest of my life. I do not want to do this for the rest of my life. What I want to do is take everything that I've been through, the debt, the ability, obviously I could get myself out of debt. I knew the finance industry, the wisdom of God. I'm going to use this to help a few people in my home city of Bradford. I'm getting married in 16 weeks. This is going to be well awkward tonight when I sit down with Lizzie. So that Tuesday night, we were doing the place settings for the wedding, for our forthcoming wedding. And I leaned in and just sort of said, I'm going to give my job up and go and help the poor. And I remember just quickly going on, I think we'll put Auntie Margaret, Uncle Jack there. She won't know this. So she's really, my wife is very calm. Just let it settle a bit. And then just said, I'm not marrying you for your money or your nice house, because by then I'd got a nice house. I said, that all turned out good because we lost that. She said, I believe God's got something for you. I don't really understand what you're doing. Still to this day, probably never really understood what I was doing, and that was great. But I believe in you and I believe in God, and you've got the faith, and I'm with you. Let's go do it. So we did. So we got married, I went on our honeymoon and came back, and somebody given us £10, and we went, right, off we go. And I just went out to the streets of Bradford in my local area and just went and found poor and needy people and did what Paul had done for me. I brought hope. I brought some wisdom. I knew what to do. I cared for them. They trusted me. They started to get out of debt. And, of course, I was not ashamed of the gospel, hence the name Christians Against Poverty. Mm. And then it just got basically out of hand, for want of a better word. Just grew and grew. I was, by the way, very entrepreneurial, proper on it. I'm getting ready on the way. I just crack on. I trust God. It was grim, though. Behind the scenes of the, ended up in all the countries and 500 centres, 1,000 staff here in the UK, all that stuff, which was amazing. But behind the scenes, we didn't get paid on time for 13 years. We lost our home. We were often as challenged as the clients we were helping. Some really grim stuff. But at no time, we always had somewhere to live. We always had food on the table. We had an amazing group of people who really were making it possible. And we were seeing lives transformed and people were finding faith. What's not to persevere with? I just sometimes think sort of leadership and all that, I just sometimes think, we should be doing a lot more talking about just a bit of backbone. A bit of some more, oh my God, come on. You see what people will do to build a business to make money in the world. And here we are with the Spirit of God inside us. And, something doesn't happen as you think it'll going to happen. It's all, God's, steer it to everybody. Come on, chill out. If you're going to do something for God, it ain't going to be a walk in the park. Read your Bible. The Apostle Paul, the most anointed man ever to walk the first year. He says this, for I know what it is to be in lack or to be in plenty, to be well fed or hungry. Oh my gosh, he's a clever guy. If he had any money, he'd have bought some food. Amen. So it's like everybody thinks, if you've got everything you need, it's all going well, God's with you. I'm a little bit suspicious of that, to be honest. I'm a bit like, really? That says God's with you now. He does provide, but he won't provide how you think. He does provide, but not when you want. And he will do it the way he does it, not how you think. So that is the journey of Christians Against Poverty. And hundreds joined in that. Hundreds of people just went, yes, We will accept not being paid on time. We will divide out what we've got every month. We will carry on. We will grow. We will trust God. So tough, but amazing lives have been changed. So that grew in me. Obviously, my background's a little bit difficult, you know, so I'm kind of got a bit more of that perhaps.
Yeah. And John, I was one of those and one of those church leaders that signed up to CAP and created a debt center and joined in the CAP story.
Amazing, wasn't it?
It was amazing.
And continues, yeah, around the world.
Continues. And, you know, I saw that picture of you with that terrible screensaver saying Christians Against Poverty rolling around. I love that because it's something like the 1990s.
Because I wasn't Christians on the screenshot. It's Christians. I'd spelt it wrong. If it hadn't been for Lizzie, my wife, who's got an English degree, and sort of reconnected the spelling, you know, we could have been Christians Against Poverty. But it's not how you spell it.
The registered charity.
You live it.
How that's well it. Said, John.
Come on.
But we're talking about leadership, and you know, you've got this idea of helping people out of poverty, and I love the way you've put your Christian faith front and center. You haven't just got sidetracked into just doing a good project or helping people get out of debt, but actually pointing to the actual answer to their life's greatest need. But, you know, when, as you said, it exploded. I mean, I was part of that process. I heard some of the stories. I used to come along. I remember you and Matt doing the 20th anniversary and sitting there and celebrating with you with the balloons and stuff. And it's like, but that's great from where we were sitting. You were serving the local church. We were able to help the needs of people nearby. But in your head office, apart from ringing bells and blowing kazoos and all that kind of crazy stuff that you guys invented at the Jubilee Centre, you know, but what was it like as a leader when it's going so fast, you almost can't keep up with it? That the speed of, and especially when you're doing good, it's not just you're making money, you're doing good. Yeah. How did you even give it leadership when it's like leading you?
Yeah, I think almost what I'd learned sort of in the world environment, you know, wasn't all bad. The motives were horrific. Power, personal wealth, no care for anyone else, you know, but some of the leadership stuff was great. And I think for me, I think the secret for me has always been basically just, I am who I am. So I ain't trying to be no one else. You know, how hard is that? Man, getting up on a morning and go, today I am. What? It's not stars in their eyes. It's life. Today I am Johnny Boy. So being myself, I've always felt, you know, very comfortable in who I am. I know of my shortfalls. I know of mistakes I've made and all that kind of stuff. So reasonably balanced. And I think that whole sense of just knowing that God is with you, and also that it's unlikely to work out as you think, and who is really in control. I think those sort of fundamental leadership traits, of which I'm continuing to live now in my 60s, you know, and I am strategic and I am futuristic. You know, I can see the future as if I was there. I can work out how to get there in my mind with 30 years experience of growing things and the previous 15 years of survival and prospering. So it's all in there. But I never really thought it was mine. So that was great. I always knew that it was his. I knew my best was good enough, and often I would fall short of that, but it was still good enough. So that was okay. So kind of the sort of relaxed sense of God's presence and his spirit within us. And also, you know, everybody says it as a cliche, but man, you know, how do you know your leader? Well, look behind you. You know, have a look. You know, and also that sober judgment, Hebrews, you know, that sober judgment. You know, I think it's easy for me because of my back, easier for me, you know, didn't go to a university, didn't go to a posh school, didn't have any family wealth, didn't have anything that would suggest. And so that sober judgment really mixed with the Hebrews 10:34. And Johnny Boy, I used to say it myself, you know, I sit there sometimes like gripping, thinking, oh my gosh. And Jesus said to me, Johnny Boy, do not throw away your confidence, for it will be richly rewarded. For in just a little while, he who is coming will come and not delay. And if you shrink back, Johnny Boy, I will not be pleased with you. But you, me, and all the team are not those who shrink back, but are saved. And that saved salvation leadership core, you can't fake it, man. You either believe it and live it, or you don't. And I really do think that that is the thing that God did. And of course, you know, like Matt Barlow, the guy who joined me 2 years in, you know, he is a world-class leader in his own right. Boy, oh boy, was he a massive part of it. You know, he brought lots of the gifts and skills I didn't have. He was an incredible leader in his own right. And then he brought others. Well, you could just list them. But that's God and us and culture and all the rest of it. So integrity, you know, who are, you know, people sometimes say to me, man, you haven't changed, as if it's not like some kind of criticism. You're just like you were when you started CAP, or you're just like you were 10 years ago. It's like, wow. Can you imagine somebody said to you, wow, you are really different. You're not like you used, you know, fundamentally, you know, I'm the same. I'm a bit wiser.
Yeah. Well, it's I can hear the passion and the spirit in your voice as you talk about, you know, what how God called you to be you. And, you know, this has come out of that. But in 2020, you decided to step away from this journey, having been there for 25 years. Tell us a bit about why that was and how it came about.
2020. Yeah. So I fundamentally didn't believe it was mine. So it started 25, you know, it started 25 previously when I started it. So I never thought it was mine. I was amazed I could be involved in it, and it was exciting. You know, I loved it. Wow, Johnny boy. And God often reminded me that, you know, I wasn't the only one in the wings. There were others available, you know. Although some of the ones did say perhaps he's asked some others to do it who didn't do it. So that's a combination deal. So it wasn't mine. I really had sort of, although I am an activator, I rank things. So my mind is, although I can't read and write very well, I can't read in the age of 12. You know, that's really as far as I got. But my math is off it. You know, math thinking in numbers. So I went through my whole thing. I still do it today. I grade things 1 to 10. And a 1, I need to be making the decision right there and then. It's like 1 either way, and rank it up. So, you know, leaving CAP was, if that was the scale, was 100. So you can imagine this got massive amount of attention. So I think when you're moving on from something, we'd like there not to be any sort of pulling away. You know, you want to sort of be moving on, everything's fantastic, and it is and was amazing. But fundamentally, God had to create some space in my spirit and my soul to allow the move to take place. He just had to allow some drawing away. Otherwise, why would I ever have left? I could have stayed there. I loved the job, loved what I was doing. I could have stayed there another 5 years, rode into the sunset, and been the happiest ever that God gave me a chance to do that. But something in me just said, it's time. It's time for others. We need, you know, like we all like the new wine and wineskin when it's us, when we're the new wine. I mean, wow, that's, if you're the new wine, it's awesome, isn't it? Let's get a new wineskin and a wine. Well, I'm a bit of a sort of 1961 Bradford vintage, if you know what I mean. So, there's a time when he needs a new wineskin and a new wine. And that was where I got to. And it wasn't because I knew I had something else to do. It was more to do with that. I said to God, if you have something else for me to do, I've got to create the space. You've got to create the space for God to do the miracle. People say, I don't get any miracles. And I'm just going, well, when do you put yourself in a place where you need one then? Mm-hmm. And it's that. So it was all to do with just knowing it was the right time and good leaders around the world. Time to go. So I went, and it all went amazingly. CAP were astonishingly generous, kind, honouring, really, really spectacular. You know, sat in a room, me saying to them, what do you want me to do? And they're saying, no, what do you want to do? I said, no, what do you want to do? It's like, seriously, I'm busy. Can we just crack on? What do you want? When? How do you want to go? You know, let's get on with it. And they were very supportive of the new stuff when it became apparent that God had something else for me to do. So all good. But some sad days, grieved some things, you know, just because, you know, it's right to move on. If you're grieving something, doesn't mean it's not right to move on. It means you cared about it while you were there.
Mm-hmm. Talk a bit more some of that process. I think, you know, leaders, all of us as Christians trying to work out, you know, God's kind of call in our lives, what's the next steps, where we're going, you know, whether that decision is about a change of job or, you know, a change of relationship and, you know, getting married or having children or moving house, so many different decisions we make and we're trying to go. But for you, the process of having become synonymous with CAP, and I know it probably carried cover 5 years later, it's still the story that people want to talk to you about. You know, I remember we were on holiday in 2019. I bumped into you in France at LPO.
That was great.
And it was, and I was speaking, and you were very kind and seemed to really enjoy what I was bringing. But I remember you were just like in that place where you were just processing, and just I could see everything, every conversation, you were notes taking all the time. And I'm like, something's going on with John right now. And I just felt privileged that you were even in the room, and I was able to hopefully positive contribution to that. But when I heard your announcement, I was like, oh, you've been processing this for some time. This has been not a quick, you know, reaction to something. This has been a thought that you've journeyed carefully. Can you talk to us some about that, how you and Lizzie as well, because you both started together, how you talked that conversation through?
Yes, I will. I'm just obviously it's a podcast, so you can't see me, but I've just got in my Bible.
That's good.
Okay, so this is my process. This is the process. So when I got a new Bible, I rewrite it all. So this is every word, everything anybody's ever shared with me. You're in here, Tim. I know you're in here recently because I spent 3 years digitizing every word, every date, and every person that anybody had ever given me over 30 years. That was my 30th saved present. Wow. So, you know, the time when you make better decisions is when you're not making them. So it's the times when you're not desperate. It's the times when you persistently and consistently bring yourself through the word, and you are committing your life to a dedication to him as best we can, or falling short all the time. Come to my world. So I think for me, decisions are very personal to the individual, but I think everybody's got something. So I'm an activator. Okay, so if I get a sense to do something on a Monday, my natural inclination is by the end of the day, provided it's not 11 o'clock, and even if it's 11 o'clock at night, I'd probably be up and at it if I could start there and then. So he works with me different to works with other people. So for me, he's not likely to say, you know, go do this, because he knows I'll just go do it. Whereas for other people, you know, they find making decisions really hard. So he might have to literally shout for a year to get other people to do what. The method is not the issue. The issue is the outcome. And the security of it. So I went into the decision of leaving CAP with a sense of being realistic around the challenges it could bring, not being rose-tinted glasses, being aware that I was walking away from salary, security, and all the other wonderful things that went along with the role as founder and international director of Christians Against Poverty. So realism is also a big part of a decision-making. I'm a man of faith. I'm a man of believing for God for miracles, but I've also lived a really, you know, I've lived a life that tells me not all will go well. So I don't look over the cliff and go, oh, we're going to have a nice parachute landing. I look at the rocks and go, man, they're hard. You know what I mean? So being in the Word, the amount of time you spend on something has got to be proportionate to the scale of it. You know, I've seen people spend more time, you know, on whether to go to a midweek group, yeah, as to whether or not they leave the change church. And it's like, what? So come on, everybody. You know, you've got the Spirit of God in you. Decide how serious the decision is in leadership. You know, you're making decisions all the time, day in, day out. You're making loads, but flipping, be able to recognize one. Again, when I see leaders just make profound decisions and profound proclamations, and I can tell, have you really thought about that? You know, another thing I've never done is I've very, very, in fact, I never use the God's told me phrase. Never, ever. It's like, whoa, steady. Once you've said that, not only you, but everybody else around you is now utterly sort of, wow. You know, I would say things like, I believe the Lord is leading me. I sense his spirit in. I feel comfortable despite the challenge. My faith tells me that God will look after me, whatever happens. It's because then you'd be more realistic, because it will be true. It never happens as you think, as leaving CAP didn't. It always will at times be worse than you expect, as it has. And it will also at times be slightly better for a short time than you think. But fundamentally, if God's at the core of something you're going to do, you need to buckle down, because it's going to be tough. Read your Bible. read the Apostles' Journey and you will see. But the great news is God is able to do abundantly more in the hardship, in the difficulty, in your mistakes, in having to forgive yourself, in saying sorry to staff, in making decisions that impact people. And the higher the leadership position, the more impactful you'll be, the more mistakes you'll make, and the more difficult it will end up. But God's grace is sufficient for your failing. So for me, leaving CAP was a complete bringing together of decades of making decisions, both through a sense of seeking his word, spending time on it, praying, thinking, talking to friends, all that classic stuff. And then fundamentally, it comes a point when you've got to go. You've got to go. And the bigger the decision, the bigger the fear. Feel the fear and do it anyway, because fear robs, faith gains. And even if you go the wrong way, which I have done, someone who is moving, it's physics. But if you're moving, it's really easy to change direction. Whereas if you're stationary and your center of gravity, if your center of your spiritual gravity is really low, i.e. you're stuck in your ways, you're not going to do anything different, you are hard to move. But if you're much freer, moving with God, moving forward, trusting him, then he will change your direction. And I have seen that over the last 4 years now since making that decision, you know, changing direction, because we're moving forward and we're doing something and trusting God. And also, it might not work. Oh, my gosh, everybody, you know what I mean? It might not work. You know, it's okay. You know, think about when your kids have got five kids. You know, when my kids go and do stuff, I sometimes think, what? You know, what? You're going to do that? And they go do it. And it's like, great. And they learn. And he comes out all right in the end. And they make some mistakes. Well, we're his children. So he will look on us with that fondness of, I can imagine him looking down and, oh, Johnny boy, what on earth are you, you know, what are you thinking? What are you doing? But fortunately, he's got a lot more power than I have as a physical dad. And he's got a lot more wisdom than I ever will have. And a lot more compassion and grace and kindness. And he will guide you and lead you.
Oh, I love that, John. And I'm laughing and smiling along. And, you know, our God is a God who moves. And so I love that idea of, you know, being on the move and being nimble and ready to move with him. And yeah, that's really inspired me. I've got to ask before we get on to what you're doing now.
Yep.
Sunday Times best leader, 3 times. How on earth do you become that?
By a combination of God's grace and, I'm sure, good fortune. So that was given to me and Matt Barlow as joint Sunday Times leaders. Right. We did CAP together. First 10 years, I definitely led it. And then the next sort of 10 years, we did it very much together. And then the last 10 years, he would have been a true CEO with that accountability to make his own decisions. We never did anything significant that we didn't both agree on, irrespective of whether I were in charge or we were doing it together or he was in charge. So you basically, that's a confidential survey done by your staff. So, yeah. Quite a bar, and they fill it in. So it's looked upon as a really good reflection. And yeah, I think we got it because we had some core values, you know. Fundamentally, we were Christ-centered as leaders by action, not by statement. We had a generous spirit, generous to staff, you know, rigorous, never ruthless, you know, all that kind of stuff. A humility. I've been able to say we got it wrong, and an overwhelming passion for the mission, which we kept to the center, and we treated people as well as we could, and we definitely got it wrong. You know, that's some of the hardest things when I've made wrong decisions, when people have been involved. I've found that harder than any operational decision that just didn't work. So we won it, and we just kept winning it. We came second once, and that was very funny. Very funny, very, very funny. But yeah, I just think why do we do it? Well, we certainly do it for accolades, you know, for me and Matt. Seriously, we're fine. But, you know, we're sat in a massive 2,000-seater auditorium in central London with the Sunday Times giving awards for best things, this and that. And the winner of the Sunday Times Best Company of the Year is Christians Against Poverty. Hush, awkward clapping from 1,700 of them going, who the heck's that? So I do believe it says in the word, you'll get a good reputation before God and man. Right, come on, church, come on, charities. Let's get this sorted out as well. And that's why I get particularly impacted when that is not the case, when leaders, bless, I'm not critical, we've all made mistakes, but when people, just there for the grace of God, go, I really feel that. But yeah, I just think, come on, everybody, please, church, leaders.
Well, well deserved, both you and Matt, John. I mean, for me, when I look at healthy leaders, I'm always looking for the culture they create and the team around them and how they behave. And my experience of the teams you've had, both with CAP and your present organization, is the people on teams reflect really that generous values, diligent, hardworking, excellent in their way of approach and presentation. And I've always, felt like that, you've set a really good standard the way you do things. But tell us more about Isaiah 61, because we don't want to go back, because we'll go forwards. Tell us what's been happening in the last, four years. Tell us a bit of the story of Isaiah 61.
Okay. Just before I do, just want to make sure everybody hears loud and clear, Christians Against Poverty continues to be an absolutely stunning organization. A great mate of mine, Stuart McCulloch, is the CEO down there. They are super people. They have a passion for the local church. They believe that there's a calling to help the poor, and they want to do it increasingly with Jesus at the core. So, amazing group. So just big shout out for CAP. Very, very good. Around the world, Australia, New Zealand, Canada, and the US, all great people. So I think, where did that come out of? So remember that, as this year, I had a year of sort of glorious sort of obscurity, really. It really was nice, sabbatical and all the rest of it. And Isaiah 61 came out of God's challenge to me perfectly. So, you were very kind about seeing 20,000 people go out of debt every year. There were also tens of thousands of people found faith over the years, and huge salvations every, for a day, every day, loads every day. And I just felt God say to me, so Johnny Boy, when did you last lead somebody to the Lord? I'm like, ooh, it's a bit harsh. I'm just leaving CAP and having a bit of a, what am I going to do next? A bit of a break. I didn't say that. I just went, yeah, okay. So like 8 out of 10 of us, if we're honest, I had to say not for a while. So it was about, me and Lizzie could think of about 4 people in our married life that we have brought through to Christ. One in particular, almost like an adopted daughter that we've sort of brought and continue to help her and be with her. So we've done it. I haven't done it for a while and had loads of reasons why not. And then I just realized that's not good enough. I've got to do something else. So then I went, so this entrepreneurial kind of, I'm going to have a good look at it started. So I started to look at it. And then 2021, Gavin Calver, good friend of mine, CEO of the Evangelical Alliance, they'd done a survey, Talking Jesus and some other stuff. 44% of Christians don't have any significant friends to even begin to share Jesus or share their life with, 44%. And I was one of them, surrounded by bubbles of beautiful people that was a real joy to be with. So that's one. The second thing I realized is that I didn't really know what to do. So, I'm not an evangelist up front. I don't do, it's not who I am. I'm much more relational. By the way, can I stand up and do a talk if I have to? Yep. But that's not an anointed evangelist, so I can't do that. And when I saw evangelists, I used to think, shine on, I wish I could do that, but I can't. And then the third thing is just that sense of fear. 25% of Christians are fearful of sharing their faith, and 41% don't know what to do. So, hello, John, that was me. So combination, my journey plus being entrepreneurial, thinking there has to be a better way, because the good news is the vast majority of Christians know we should. Okay. If you don't think you should share Jesus, don't ring me up, go to God. It's dead easy. Vast majority know they should. Also, the vast majority want to. That's really great, because that gives Isaiah 61 the opportunity to be very gentle in what we do, because we don't have to convince people they should. We don't have to convince people they want to. And if they don't have either of those two things, that's not my job. Go read your Bible and talk to Jesus. I'm sure he'll suggest some other alternatives to your thinking. So I decided, right, I've been a real again, behind the scenes, people see the upfront stuff with CAMP, but behind the scenes, thinkers, you know, systems create behavior. Why do people don't do what they want to do is because they need a system to make them do it. So I decided to build a system that would help me do it. And it's really easy. You take a good intention. I want to go and have a coffee with a neighbor, and you make it happen. Because if you write it down, you do it. And if you don't, you don't. So we built an app called the I61 app, available on all app stores, where you set an act. So you set an act of friendship, you set an act of sharing your faith, and you set an act of inviting people to experience him. And we built the app. We had 2 years of experimenting and failing miserably. In fact, I've never failed miserably. I always fail really happy, basically. So three trials, all didn't work, but in each one we learned something really good. And the three things that came out was this thing works, but it only works with church leaders who really want to create Jesus-sharing churches. It works if there's a sense of doing it in community with other people, and it works if you will write the act down. So this afternoon at 4:30, one of my acts this month was to go out for a walk with a friend that I've built over the last few years down the road, and I'm going out for a walk with him. Why did that happen? Because I set myself an act of friendship to make sure that I care enough about people to prioritize them, which is what we do all the time. But we only tend to prioritize people in the church and people we want to spend time with. Well, I found that I want to spend time with people who are not Christians, and it just broadens it. So that's the principle. We're partnering with churches. We're up and running now. We launched last year, and we're seeing some really good progress. We have 11 people reported to have found faith through churches and individuals using the program. It's all on www.i61.org. It's really simple. People contact us and say, well, I've been on and looked at it. It looks really simple. What else is there? And we're like, there ain't anything else. Keep it simple. And also, we're very small. Three of us employed, three of the people working 1 and 2 days a week. And we keep it simple, and it's available, and everybody can do it. That's what we've been doing.
Amazing. Amazing. And we need to wrap things up for the sake of time, John, but I'd love to hear from you as we wrap this up. You know, we've got all these people listening in. You're this Sunday Times award-winning leader with these great experience of two different charities you created from scratch. But if there's one last piece of advice you could drop with our listeners, what would it be about how you lead authentically?
Core humility. Really. You know, and you can't fit, you know, what do you really believe inside? You know, do you really believe that anything, you know, I do believe anything that has happened in my life that is of any value, any life that has been touched, any person who's found faith, any generational transformation, every amazing of the thousands of people who have worked for us around the world who have come through and grown in leadership and as their family, everything comes from Jesus Christ, my Lord and Savior. He is within us and he is through us, and he must get all the glory and all the honor and all the praise. And you know yourself whether that is true or not.
Wonderful.
If it is true, you're going to be okay. And if it isn't, do something about it, because God lifts up the humble and he brings down the prideful.
Thank you, John. Johnny boy, that's a good way to wrap up our podcast for today. Thank you for joining us today on the Leadership Podcast.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
I'll say that was just such an honour to be joined by John. You know, he's just so open and says it how it is and is just him 100% of the time, isn't he? And there's so much in there that I'd like to kind of slow down and digest and ponder on. I think if I had to pick one thing out right now, straight afterwards, it would be that bit about being on the move and being nimble and you know, having that low spiritual center of gravity so that you are able to switch and pitch direction and listen to God. And our God is a God who moves, and he's with us. It's not always going to be easy. You know, in fact, quite a lot of the time it might be tough, but if you're moving, then you can pivot and you can switch and you're already on the move and you can change and flex directions. Whereas if you're stuck still and stuck in your ways, it's much harder to do that. And I found that a really inspirational kind of image and very emotive image that he sort of called up in my mind as he was talking about that.
I feel a bit sorry for our listeners at this point, because I'm enjoying watching you standing up doing this podcast, and you're fully digging around, and you're moving, and you're absolutely acting out the part of this. You know, if we're mobile, we're more likely to be able to move with the Spirit of God. I thought this is brilliant to watch. I'm going to be a meme.
Yes, if it goes out on video.
Very serious point. I'm making a mockery. I'm sorry, Ed. But I thought agreed. You know, that low center of gravity will never get moving, and momentum is a leader's great friend, and we can do something with movement. Now, the bit for me was probably not dissimilar around decision making. I thought, you know, as leaders, it's all about decision making, and that challenge of not making a decision when you're under stress or under pressure. I just thought he was delightful, just to kind of go, are we, you know, we make decisions all the time. We can do this. You know, don't let fear hold you back. Let faith overcome fear. And not be someone who's kind of almost fearful of the unknown, but getting hold of the decisions. I thought there were some really powerful things. And what an incredible story of someone from a terrible starting point, turned his life around with the power of both with God and also a great friend through his mate, Paul. That was an exciting story to hear. So wonderful.
Yeah, I liked that. Just the idea, you know, he was very certain of, like, some people find decisions very difficult, but actually there are some decisions that are level one, you could just take them. And there are others that are a level 100. And actually, if you're going to take a level 100 decision, don't treat it like a level one decision. You know, put the time in and reflect on it. And the last thing is, he actually showed us his Bible on the video. We'll get a screenshot of that and show it and put it on social as well, put it as part of the trailer, because just, you know, 30 years of wisdom and annotation. And, you know, that was super inspirational to see that as well.
Yeah. Yeah, a well-worn Bible belongs to a well-traveled Christian. So what a joy to have him with us. And thank you so much, those listening. Thank you for joining us once again on this episode of the Leadership Podcast. As always, if you've enjoyed listening, please do let someone else know. Follow us on social media, and we look forward to being with you next time. Bye for now.
This podcast is produced in partnership with 3-2, a communications and digital agency for the charity world. We enable impact for good through thoughtful communication and efficient use of digital. Find out more at freed2.com.